100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by Todd Bumgardner, strength and conditioning coach, author, and founder of Human Predator Pack Mule. He trains tier one tactical operators, backcountry hunters, and everyone in between while hunting all over the country himself. We discuss my personal journey with fitness, ways to stay consistent, a tiered approach to fitness for hunting, intensity levels, the Human Predator Pack Mule program, mistakes hunters make when preparing for hunts, how it relates to whitetail hunting, and much more. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming from John Cook out of Pennsylvania. He wrote in, "Opening day of Pennsylvania's bear muzzleloader season found me hiking the highest, steepest stuff I could find in my area. I was up on a big oak flat that I loved with some subtle but perfect rises and dips, and ended up jumping a good buck off this point that makes perfect sense for bedding. I ended up harvesting my first bear a half mile from that spot. On December 2nd, I've been having a tough year with bucks and increased pressure. I felt lost. Up on that same mountain, there's some great, super thick stuff and really steep terrain. I decided to try to get in there and hang tight, hoping the deer would use it to hide from pressure. But because of how thick and steep the stuff is, I plan to spend the first hour or so cooling down and watching the bed I jumped the buck out of 6 weeks prior. It made sense that he would come from the lesser pressured feeding ground and slip right into that bed where he could easily escape in all directions. Legal light was 6:39 a.m. and at 6:51 I heard a stick snap. I'll never forget seeing that still dark shape slowly sneaking into bed 70 yards away, and when my scope showed the rack, I didn't need to wait any longer. He dropped in his tracks when the 270 sounded and the rush hit hard. This is a spot that I've been trying to figure out for a few years now, and I couldn't have wrote the script any better. Although I was solo, the 1.25 mile drag out was so much fun, and I couldn't be more honored to have this northeastern Pennsylvania buck in my life. Meant to add also, huge shout out to Spartan Forge and their slope angle shading on this one. Finding those little unshaded areas were critical when route planning because this place is full of cliffs and huge steep drop-offs. In the dark using Spartan Forge, you can still safely route plan and get in knowing you won't hit something you can't navigate. Congratulations, John. Such an awesome buck, and I love the plan too, and getting into some of those gnarly areas and using that historical intel and trying to think of, okay, you know, hunting pressure is bad, but how can I use that to my advantage? And maybe where is that going to pinch these deer living down to? And I really think that, everything worked out on that one, obviously. So congratulations, John. If you want to check out his buck and everything there, head over to East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook. Check out the post. Give those pages a like and a follow. Really appreciate that. And if you have a story that you want to submit, please send it to my email, bodiesmeetswesthunt.com, and just put in the subject line Mountain Buck Monday, and I'd love to be able to share it. And I apologize, I've been getting a lot of these coming in. I haven't had a chance to look through them all yet, so I will get back to you. Just might take a little bit of time here, but I have them all saved and ready to go. So looking forward to sharing that, all those stories with the audience. All right, in other news, the big news this week is registration for the 2024 Mountain Buck Scouting Camp will open this week on January 18th, which is Thursday. So make sure you are signed up for the email newsletter at eastmeetswesthunt.com to be notified when the registration will open. Also, if you go to eastmeetswesthunt.com and click on events, you can find information on the event itself. It sold out in less than 3 minutes the last 2 years, so be sure to jump on it if you want to come and hang out with us. The presenters this year will be the same as last year. So we got myself, we've got Joe Martonic, who is my dad, who specializes in pre-rut and rut hunting and really all-around scouting. We have my cousin, Mason Martonic. Mason's been on the podcast before. In the last 6 years, he's killed six bucks, but five of them being absolute giants, four of them over 140, and a couple of them being close to 10 years old, if not older. So he's got a wealth of knowledge to be able to share, and doing that on limited time. We have Ryan, aka Moose Glitzky. Ryan is a scrape specialist coming out of Pennsylvania and really hardworking hunter. So excited to have him back. We have Johnny Stewart. Johnny's good at whatever he does when it comes to whitetail hunting and sees things through a different lens, but really specializes in the late season and getting on bucks after everybody else is done hunting, and he's got a way of doing that. So we got Johnny, then we have Greg Litzinger. Greg is an early season fanatic, buck bedding, rubs. He knows that stuff like the back of his hand. So the bow hunting fiend will be there again. And then lastly, we have Kenny Kane, who is a good buddy of mine, and he's a forester that understands the tree types and the vegetation and what a healthy habitat looks like to produce bigger deer and really be able to give you a little bit of a lesson on identifying trees, identifying what these deer are feeding on, which is a really valuable asset to this. So the location is different than last year. It will be in St. Mary's, Pennsylvania, or the surrounding areas there. And so that's in north central, northwestern Pennsylvania. And we got a new place that we're going to be staying at, and a new property that we're going to be scouting, some timber company property that's not open to the public. And that's by design, try to find places that we don't blow up any spots and to be able to go in. But ton of diversity and bunch of clear cuts, which we didn't have a lot of that in the previous year's camps, but still having oak trees and some of the other different vegetation. So looking forward to this year and some of the changes that we have. New location should be an absolute blast. So make sure, again, check out, sign up for the email newsletter, eastmeetswesthunt.com, and hope to be able to see you there. With that said, we'll get right into this podcast here with Todd Bumgartner. Have a great rest of your week. All right, we're live. Todd Bumgartner, welcome back to the show, man.
How are yous doing, buddy? I'm gonna go thick Pennsylvania accent for the entire time today. That's what I'm doing.
You're mixing a few. You've got some like Amish country, you know.
That's what I was gonna say.
You got that, but you're also trying to throw the Pittsburghese,
the Yinzer, yeah,
the Yinzers. And
well, it's where I'm from. It sounds like that. It's like, so my buddy Brett, we always do this joke, like, we make fun of, like, because I kind of lost my accent. Some shit comes out, but like most of, because I've lived in Virginia for so long that I don't really have it anymore. But like, we'll make fun of certain things. It's like this one old lady was walking into a grocery store one time. Brett was behind him, and they're handing out coupons. And the lady takes the coupon. She goes, "What is this? Coupons? I don't need this." And then hands it back to the lady. So we say that shit to each other all the time. But I was like, I'm going to try to go in with my central Pennsylvania accent and catch him off guard, but I don't think I can hold it the whole time.
You can't hold it the whole time. It's funny. I'm very influential depending on where I go, as far as I'm easily influenced, I guess is the way to put it, on accents. So when I'd spent, 7 or 8 days in West Virginia here recently, Southern West Virginia, deep Southern accent. And I come back and my girlfriend's like, what's this accent that you came up with? And you know, depending on where I go, I like start saying things and very easily influenced on that.
You just pick up on linguistics. Well, man, that's all it is. That's all it is.
I can see it. And wherever I'm at, they're probably like, what is this guy doing? Like,
what is this poser? You know what I mean? What's he trying to do?
Who's this poser?
I don't think so.
That's funny. But no, I it was funny. So I had, for just a quick background here, I've been training with Todd for the last 3 years, going into year four here, with Human Predator Pack Mule, which is a program that's focused on hunters and making them ready to have the best experiences possible and in the field. And I was thinking about it. So I talk to Todd regularly, you know, whether it's through text, messaging, phone calls. Got to see you at the Great American Outdoor Show last year and hang out with you a little bit, but realized you hadn't been on the podcast in about a year and a half. And I was like, you know what? We need to get Todd back on here. And, you know, it's a new year, new me type of deal. So I figured this is a good as time as any.
No, I appreciate it, man. It has been too long. I always enjoy talking with you, and it's, I always appreciate the work that you do, and I appreciate your authenticity. And I know that I just always appreciate to come on and spread the good word and help as many folks as I can, even if they just listen to this podcast and take a handful of things away from it. So I appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. So why don't we start by, since it's been a while and there's some new listeners since before, why don't you give a brief background on yourself and then a little bit about the program, and we'll kind of jump into it.
Yeah, man. So I've spent my entire adult life, my main gig is as a strength and conditioning coach, human performance coach, whatever you want to call it. I've done that in a variety of different settings. I've worked with just about everybody that you can imagine, from NFL linebackers to grandmas to middle school athletes to folks that just want to look better naked to everybody. And right now, I mean, everybody wants to look better naked, right? That's everybody. Yeah. You know, nobody's like, oh man, I don't want people to want to have sex with me. Everybody wants to look better naked. And right now I co-own and operate a gym in Sterling, Virginia, which is in Loudoun County. So it's about 30 miles outside of DC, called Beyond Strength. And we train folks that are a lot like you and I mean, not necessarily hunters, but they want to go out and use their bodies to do cool shit and not be held back. And so we train active people that want to be coached and enjoy competing with themselves. So those are the kind of folks we work with at the gym. Not all that different from who we work with in Human Predator Pack Mule. We just have more of a focus, right? So, and then I'm also a human performance coach for a tier one unit. I've done that for 7 years now. Going into my eighth year with them. And so that's just like, I get to work with guys at the tip of the spear and make sure that they stay healthy to do their job and maintain their longevity so that it's safer for you and I to go to bed at night. And so that's pretty good gig. I appreciate that. And then, obviously I have Human Predator Pack Mule, and Human Predator Pack Mule grew out of my own need. I grew up hunting in Pennsylvania. And then I started getting into Western hunting. And so I had no illusions about the physical demand of Western hunting being far different from walking the 100 yards to your tree stand in Pennsylvania and sitting there all day. Like, so I understand the difference. And I was like, well, I don't know. I would like to learn more about what I need to be, what other guys have done and have perspective on this can give me. And, I went looking, and having the experience in strength and conditioning and human performance that I've had up to that point, like I just couldn't find anything that I thought was worth that had a lot of value. And so I was like, well, I guess I got to do this for myself and I'm going to create it. And so I started writing my own programs to prep for what I thought was going to be an elk hunt. For the first year, I didn't end up going on that hunt, but then I just started documenting it and just putting it on my personal Instagram page. And so, guys just started raising their hand and saying, hey, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, man, I think there's a need here. And I think there's people would want this. So I started building out what would become Human Predator Pack Mule. And I just started, I wrote a couple articles for the Journal of Mountain Hunting. And so people started raising their hand. And so I got a couple of clients and I just started building it out, man. And so I started in the bones of it in 2019. And so obviously we're going into 2024, Jesus. And so we're going on 5 years with Human Predator Pack Mule. And so it's been cool. We have folks all over North America. I've prepped guys to go to New Zealand, and do tar and chamois hunts. We have doll sheep hunts up in Alaska. I mean, elk hunts, all the cool stuff that we all like to do. I've got to help a lot of people get ready to go do all the cool shit that we like to do. And so I really appreciate doing that. And it's been super fun. Like I've learned a ton from everybody, and it's obviously plugged me into people like you. And one of the best things for me is that I love to hunt. I'm a decent hunter. I'm not a great hunter. Like there's guys that are just way, way, way better at hunting than I am. But through osmosis of being in this world, I continue to grow as a hunter in a way that I want to grow because of that. So it's been a very cool reciprocal relationship, and I appreciate it,
Yeah, no. And like for me personally, so I've always loved to work out and, but I think I'd mentioned it on here before, but I like when I was in high school or actually, younger than that, my dad had a weight set. My dad was always big into into working out and lifting weights. And he had got me doing that young when I was in football and everything. And I started, you know, doing that. And through high school, it was like a thing every day after school. We'd walk up to the high school gym and work out with buddies. In college, it was like spend like 2.5 hours in the gym just because I had nothing else to do.
What else are you going
to
do?
Just yeah. bench press the whole time, every yeah. day, all day. But, you know, and it was funny. Like, I had different focuses at those times. That time it was just to look good and, you know, attract women. And that was kind of and to be able to, you know, tell your buddy, oh, I benched this much today. And, you yeah, know, that right. was kind of the deal with it. And then as I got into doing Western hunting, you know, some things had shifted. I tried kind of doing my own thing of creating what I thought would work here, and this person talk and that person talk. And,
sure.
and, you know, and it, you know, went okay. I was in better shape, but it wasn't. And then I went to another program that was super, super intense. And I felt like I was in really good shape, but I was getting hurt often and was just like feeling wore out a lot. And it was just like the perfect timing when Matt Comment, mutual friend of ours, had introduced me to you. And it was like, okay, this program, like I knew right away, had kind of fit me and my style, and just like feeling good with being able to do these workouts that felt very focused on it. And the biggest year for me, I felt like that what the program had done, and I'm not trying to sit here and just sell Todd completely, but it was in 2022, I went on elk hunt in Montana for 21 days. And I remember you talking about, like, with a lot of the workouts that we do is like building strength and endurance over time so that you can do these things for a long period of time, not just these short bursts, but being able to do that if you need to. And you know, 21 days is a long time. And, you know, up until the last few days, I was starting to get, you know, pretty wore out at that point. But throughout that whole time, I felt good, and like I was able to run up and down and chase elk herds the whole time, and it was just like, man, this is awesome. I love feeling this way of like where I wasn't getting I wasn't being held back by not being able to get somewhere. If I was being held back, it was from my own skills and learning and hunting versus, you know, actually being able to get there. Yeah, so that's what was like a real eye-opening experience. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since with you.
That's awesome, man. I remember you telling me about that soon after it happened, but I appreciate you saying it again. It's like, that's one of those things where you just don't want your physical limitations to hold you back. You don't want to look across the drainage and be like, I can't do it. I can't get there. Or, you know, like you said, the day after day. And I think that's what people don't necessarily realize is like the day after day takes, you know, we talk a lot about aerobic conditioning and building an aerobic base, and that's a big part of it. But, you know, I think one of the interesting things is like, for example, people will poo-poo on something about like getting 10,000 steps a day, right? Something like that. Like, well, that's too easy. That's not going to be impactful. But like, one of the things that's going to help you get to where you want to be and make the changes that you want to make and then have the stamina to go out and hunt for 21 days is being active as much as possible every day. And so if you are on a program that allows you to be consistent without beating the absolute piss out of you on one day, and then you don't feel like you can train for another 2-3 days, then there's no way that you're going to build the strength and endurance that you need to go and get up day after day after day and continue on a hunt. And like what you just said is, and I've had, you know, some other folks say the same thing to me, is like, I felt like I could just get up and go every day. And I like still had gas. And that's the biggest compliment that I can get as a human performance coach for hunters, is like being able to go up. Well, first, not feeling limited, like, no, I can get up that hill and I can get to where I need to be. And I know I can recover once I get up there. But then also knowing, like, when you roll out of the tent in the morning, you're going to be able to go, or getting up, you're like, all right, Jesus, like I expected to feel like hell and I don't, you know, and that's just consistency. And that's like doing a program that has the right amount of intensity, whether that's hard, easy, moderate, so that you can train consistently, so that you can build the fitness that you need, and so that you can train consistently enough to do that.
Yeah, and even like some of the other things that I've learned from it that have helped me is, for example, every workout starts with some sort of mobility, if that's the right term for it. But, you know, as also my girlfriend says, is she sees me rolling around on the floor a lot, you know, so, you know, doing these things that kind of get you ready for it. But that I also take that into when I'm hunting and I'm doing some of these things in my tent before
I get out
and getting ready, getting your muscles warmed up, you know, and the part of doing that every single day, none of it is hard to do. It's just doing that those stuff every day. And someone like me that it was extremely not flexible and just not good with a lot of that stuff was just like, that helped me, you know, and then getting ready. And it just builds this muscle memory of doing these things before you do a physical activity. And it helped, again, into the hunting. Because you don't know, like on a hunt, you're on an elk hunt, you might walk 3 miles in that day, or you might walk 14. You don't know what's gonna come through there. If you're on a break, you know, sitting there and doing some different stretches and things, and a lot of that I'd learned in some of those movements through the program. And what I've liked about the program is, so it's completely on my phone, so I can download the workouts if it's offline. If you know, you don't have service to be able to do it. But I can go through, watch videos, know exactly what I need to do. And then, every so often, you know, you or Jordan reaches out and it's like, hey, you know, saw you put a comment in here about this. Like you should take it a little easier if you're not feeling good on this tomorrow or whatever it might be. And it's just, it's helpful to have that and then also have that accountability. Although I'm not in a class with other people and I'm worried about people seeing me there, it's also the aspect of, man, I don't want Todd to think I'm a loser over here because I skipped this or I did that. And like, it helps keep you accountable. And for me, that's a huge, huge benefit.
No, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it's just like, there's a few things there that to touch on, like limiting barriers is a big thing, right? So it's like, if you know that having access to everything on your phone is going to make it easier for you to do the things that you need to do, like that's a huge thing, like environmental change and getting things out of your way and making things easier is always going to be the best case scenario, right? And so that's where you look at like people, we call them the shoulds, like they should all over themselves. Like, I should just be able to do this. I should just be able to do that. And what people don't realize is a lot of it is environment, or it's like you have skills to build. And so maybe you shouldn't be able to do that. Like, goal setting is a great example. Like, a lot of people feel like they should just be able to set goals and achieve them. And like, they beat the hell out of themselves when they can't do it. But the reality is like, it's a skill. And so you have to start with a very small aspect of that, get good at it, and then you can expand out from there. But then like another thing that you said, it's like, it's the, some of the things like the mobility training and stuff, like these aren't physically difficult things to do, but you know, I heard somebody say one time, like it takes way more mental toughness to actually be consistent with the things that are easy to do than it is to go out and try to bury yourself with some hard workout, where it's like being able to sit there and do something that might seem boring or not seem sexy and just do that over and over and over again and commit and be consistent. Like, that builds some mental toughness way more than just being like, I'm going to go suffer through this workout that I think is doing something for me because it makes me feel like hell, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot, you know, yeah, you're 100% right. It's like the way I look at it is, okay, doing the, what looks like a simple thing over and over and over again, building that consistency is similar to like at, you know, building a business or doing anything really, but like, building a business, you got to do the simple things over and over again. Like thinking of a marketing standpoint, because that's what I'm most familiar with. But it's like, all right, sending out the emails weekly, you know, posting on social media this many days a week, doing these things that are just monotonous, that doing, staying consistent with it. Alex Hormozi, which you and I both follow, that he says it all the time. He's like, the difference between successful and unsuccessful businesses a lot is doing the things that you don't want to, they're just easy, they're boring, but doing them for a long period of time in a consistent manner. And it's the same thing versus, you know, like the hard workouts where you got weighted vests on, you got shit hanging between your crotch and weights and all this stuff and you know, burning yourself out for one thing. That's like the flashy things in business that pop up and you might do it for a period of time, get bored and you stop. And it's like, that's how I look at it. And I've definitely seen it through the programming and your approach to it.
Yeah. Well, you got to stop chasing feelings. And I think that that's one of the things that people get caught up in is they expect a workout to make them feel a certain way, when it's there's a certain act of belief and a certain act of faith. Because if you go out and you do a bunch of aerobic capacity training, like, it doesn't feel hard and it shouldn't feel hard, but the accrual of all of that volume is what's going to pay dividends and make it easy for you to get up the hill in September. And so there is a certain act of like belief and faith and saying, well, like, I believe this is going to pay dividends. But it just starts with like commitment. What do you value? And staying on top of those things. And like, if you're a person that values consistency, well, it's like, if you consistently do the thing, it's going to take you closer to where you want to be. And just, man, like you said, like, even if you don't feel like doing something, sometimes you got to do it. Now there's like, you got to temper that with like, you shouldn't do stupid things to beat the hell out of yourself. But it's like, you know, there are certain aspects, like, I just don't feel like warming up today. It's like, well, you could not, and you could also pay for that. And so you're right. It's just, it comes down to, you got to let go of feelings and you just got to do the thing regardless of how you feel sometimes.
Yeah, man, that the warming up one was the hardest one for me to do. Cause it'd be like, oh, I really got to sit there and do these things for 5 to 7 minutes or whatever, however long it takes to do these things. And I'm just like, ah, oh. But you know, it's just, for me, it helps of like seeing the thing in front of me, and I got to physically check off a box, put the date in, that it like helps keep me aligned with going through and doing it. And, yeah. And you know, everyone, like, as much as you want to say you feel like you're mentally tough or you're disciplined, I feel like for me, I have to understand where and like my weaknesses with it, and then just find ways to be able to get past those weaknesses. And for me, having that stuff in front of me and it's like a forced discipline on me to be able to do it. Now, obviously you can just not open up the app and then you don't have to do anything, but there's an aspect of it, but finding those things that help you, you know, like with anything that, you know, creating habits of doing things, like, you know, there was the book Atomic Habits about stacking habits and somehow how that can help you, you know, build these habits to do things consistently. And everybody's mind works a little bit differently, and kind of finding how to create that consistency and be okay with doing those boring things over and over again, like archery, you know, shooting your bow every day or however often that you decide you're going to shoot your bow. I mean, it's a lot of times it's the same thing as the day before, but it's doing those things and creating that muscle memory. That's how I look at it.
It's correct. I think you're right. Jordan and I have a joke that we're the purveyors of the unsexy.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Because everybody else is just selling you sex, man, you know, and it's, and if you look at anything from, you know, my business partner, Jim Chris, has just gotten way back into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, if you're going to do jits, like, going and just rolling at a high intensity all the time isn't going to make you good. but drilling is going to make you good. You know, shooting your bow and working on all the things that you need to focus on consistently is going to make you good. Going and just launching arrows at 75 yards is not going to make you good. So it's the, same kind of deal, man. It's the same. It applies across the board where it's like the basics done over and over again and done brilliantly is what makes you progress. And a lot of it just, it's not the, like we get caught on this like hero worship type thing. And it's so funny because, you know, I work with a lot of ex-SEALs, a lot of ex-Rangers, a lot of ex-MARSOC guys. And, you know, there's a big, all of those special operations, like they have a very big brand right now. And there's a lot of guys that want to sniff holsters and be like them, you know, and it's just, there's two things to keep in mind. Like, first of all, you're not them and that's okay. You don't have to be them. But then it's just like this projection of like, you have to do these brutal workouts all the time to be able to be like them. And like, first of all, well, the smart ones don't, and you know, they don't do that. And there are a bunch of ones that get by doing that, but they do it in spite of what they should be doing. And they also just have some things that other regular people don't have. And what you also don't realize is like a lot of these guys struggle in ways that is similar to us and struggle with things that you don't struggle with. And so you have to take a step back and realize that like all of this super hard shit, like, do you want to be like and train like a Navy SEAL, do all this kind of stuff? Like, first of all, do you need it? And second of all, realize that like the stuff that we do with tier one operators, it's just the basics done brilliantly over and over and over again. And that's all it is, man. That's all it is. And the difference between them and a lot of people, the ones that get to the top, is like, of course, there's a measure of talent and there's a measure of natural ability and all those things for sure. But like their ability to just do things over and over and over and over and over again, regardless of how they feel, is really how they feel about the thing, I think is the way to look at it.
Yeah, it's funny because so one of my best friends is still active duty in the SEAL teams, and like mm-hmm. I've talked to him about his programs, and a lot of them are very similar to yours as far mm-hmm. as like the way that, you know, it wasn't exactly what you see on TV and the way that they train. And then I'd went with a couple of other buddies that are ex-SEALs and down to a long range shooting course, and I was like, they're, you know, snipers, and I'm like, oh man, can't wait to learn these tricks, you know. And it was the basics done, like you said, done brilliantly over and over and over again, and focusing on those basics in a step process that builds, you know, becoming a good shooter. And you know, there's obviously things you got to learn to be able to shoot further. I know you've gotten into doing that and everything, but it's not, there's not like this secret potion or magic or gear that does that thing. It's doing that, and I've learned so much from being around that community too on those things. And again, the media can kind of make that look one way or another, and I'm sure some of them are, I mean, they're people, everyone's different and has Absolutely. Their own, you know, thought process with it. And but yeah, I mean I see it on everything. Deer hunting, it's like, to be successful, it's like basically don't be lazy, do the things you know you need to do and do them right every time. It's like, yeah. All right, you're going in to walk into your stand. The easy way is take this straight line here, but you're probably going to blow a bunch of deer out going there. But if you walk this way, use the wind and the thermals, come up, get into your stand, and you do that over and over and over again, you know, it's easy to do that on day one. But are you able to do that on day 10,
exactly.
You know, and continually do that? And that's where I see there's so many parallels in, you know, with getting in shape, whether for hunting or in general, with all of these other things. And it's just like a common trend.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly it. You know, it's just like walking into your stand the right way, then know that you, the way that you know that you should, is akin to like, do your the warm up, man. Like, don't skip it, you know, like it's yeah. the same kind of thing. And that's, you just keep stacking and stacking and stacking and stacking and stacking wins on top of that. And that's what accumulates into success, where it's like, I think a lot of guys, they separate those things. And sometimes they are separate events, but it's like, if you don't walk into your stand the right way for 10 days, you're not going to see the buck that you want to see. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to realize that this is accumulating your opportunities to be able to be successful. And it's the same thing with training. It's like, if you're smart about it, and like, one of the toughest things to do is to coach people to work at a moderate to easy intensity, because you're like, you want to feel like you want to go burn yourself, because you get a reward after that, right? Like, you get, like, your brain rewards you for going and doing that. And to get people to pull back and realize that, like, to lean into maybe what you might call boredom, is that's what you need to do. Where it's like, the toughness in that aspect isn't like you can go suffer. Like, you can get yourself to suffer through a lot of shit, but getting yourself to work at the right intensity when you feel like you want to go faster, like, that takes some skills, some toughness, just as much as it is like, you know, going and kicking your own ass, dude, you know?
So, and with that being said, so, you know, when you are on a hunt and you have, you know, a situation where you do get beat down and you're having to pack out an animal and it's heavy and it's hard, you know, I hear that as an argument for training for those, you know, those situations and making sure you're there. How are you describing that? Or how would you tell somebody that you don't necessarily have to do that exact thing at that intensity level to be ready for it?
It's accumulate, and that, like we talked about earlier, it's accumulation of volume. So doing a lot of 50-pound rucks is going to pay way bigger dividends than trying to do a handful of 100-pound rucks on the way out, you know? So if you look at it this way too, so there's different qualities that are going to take you to be able to hike out. Let's say you killed an elk and you have 100 pounds on your back walking out. So what are the things that are going to allow you to do that safely or effectively and then allow you to perform? Your aerobic base, like having aerobic capacity, which you would build through a lot of light rucking, running, hiking, things like that. And then like your structural integrity, which would be, you know, your joints essentially sit the way that they should sit when you're standing up. And so that way you're not wasting energy. You're not putting yourself in awkward positions. You're not causing discomfort because the weight that's sitting on your back is sitting on your back in an awkward position, which is going to just fatigue you faster, which also has to do with pack setup, right? Making sure that your pack sit in the right spot. And then it's strength, it's relative strength. So those are the things that are going to contribute to this, right? And so one of the things that I see that people mess up, and we have the information on this, I can't think of the guy's name off the top of my head, but did a study at the Naval Academy about it. It's like, once you get to a certain point with rucking, like, you start to see diminishing returns of what you can actually get from it if you put too much weight. And it's like somewhere, it's like 30%, 30 to 33% of your body weight. Like, if you're continually doing that, like, you're going to start to see diminishing returns and you just won't get better. So like, where you see the most benefit is somewhere between 20% of your body weight. That's where you start to, like, it starts to be enough load to around 30% of your body weight. And so that's where we do most of our training. And the way that I phrase it is, like, you have to realize that there's a difference between practice and the game, right? So like, I played college football. We never went out and smacked each other and smacked pads during the week in college. Like, we worked on our skills. We worked on our scheme. We'd pop a little bit, but not hard, just to stay, you know, kind of fresh. And then we'd go out and play the game on Saturdays. Thing when it comes to like a pack out and being fit for it, you have all of your practice that you crew that makes you ready for the game. And so that's really it. So if you get strong enough, your butt, and you have the right structural integrity, you're going to be able to walk out with that 100 pounds if you need to, if you have the aerobic base, because if you don't have that, your heart rate's going to jump way too high as soon as you put the weight on your back and you start moving. Same's going to be, and each step is going to cost you more if you don't have the structural integrity and you don't have the strength to carry that load. Like, another thing to consider is, like, how much do you actually need to walk out with? And that's, I was talking to Aaron Snyder about this, and, you know, not really more than 50% of your body weight. And that's if you're strong and conditioned and used to rucking. So I think another thing is, like, keeping in mind that it's not a race in most instances. Like, be smart, know the terrain that you have to walk out on, and realize that you can take a few trips. I mean, I understand if you're like 6 miles back in and you're like, what the hell am I going to do? It's like, all right, I get where you're at, but you also have to be smart, you know? Do you need to call help? Do you need to do something else? So that's all like contingency to say that if you need to hike out and with a bunch of weight on your back, realize that feeling the weight sometimes isn't such a bad thing. So we'll go up to 45% of our body weight sometimes when we do high intensity continuous step ups. And that's where we put our pack on pretty heavy, one step every 5 seconds, and on a box in a very controlled environment. So you get used to the weight, but you don't have to go out on a trail and do something dangerous with a ton of weight on your back, right? Because it's like, if you're continually, consistently rucking with a high percentage of your body weight on your back on a trail, on any, like something bad is going to happen. So we want to limit the exposures to the bad things. So you can adjust and at least acclimate and feel what that weight feels like by doing something like a high intensity continuous step up a couple few times throughout the summer. But where the real magic is making sure that you move well, your joints sit in pretty good position, you're strong, and you have a good aerobic base. And if you do those things, you will be able to pack out with heavier loads than you need, than you consistently train with. And it's letting go of, I think that's one of the things that people overtrain for, is they worry too much about the pack out because they're scared of it. It's like, dude, that's like what percentage of a hunt maybe, right? Like if you kill one the first day, maybe it's a big percentage of your hunt, but most of your hunt is not that. It is a small percentage of your hunt. And so there are so many other things that you need to do and be ready for. And preparing for that comes from what you do to prepare for those other things. You move well, you build your aerobic system, you make sure that you're strong. And if you do that consistently, you're smart about it, you'll be able to pack it. I mean, I walked out the first night after I killed an elk in Montana in 2021 with well over 100 pounds on my back. I'm going to tell you right now, it was fucking stupid. And I didn't need to do that. Like I could have, I was just, I wanted the meat out. You know what I mean? I think everybody understands what that feels like. And so I walked out with way too much weight on my back down the steep ass hill, steep ass part of a mountain, through blowdown, through all this kind of shit. Like how I didn't get hurt is an absolute miracle. But up throughout the course of that train up, like the most I rucked with was 50 pounds. And I did high intensity continuous training like a handful of times with like 80 pounds on my back. And I'm a decent sized guy. I'm 200 pounds. I have a long training history and a consistent training history. So it allows me to be able to do stuff like that. So I'm starting to get long winded, but the biggest thing is just to really, if you're consistent with making yourself stronger, training to move well and building your aerobic base, you'll be able to pack out with heavy weights.
Well, I have three comments on that. One about the controlled environment for the step ups. Do you remember when I got hurt doing those?
No.
When so it's funny. But when I had I don't know if I didn't have a box or what I was doing now. And I was using my porch and I was stepping up on it, my sidewalk had, you know, it was a little bit uneven, old, it was poured concrete a while back and it was had some uneven corners and I was stepping up on it. I stepped down and I rolled my ankle Do you remember that? Yeah. And I felt extremely stupid because it was something that I should not have been hurt doing, but yeah. So that you use a box, use a flat ground and you'll be fine, you know, make yeah. sure don't do what I did there. But, and the other thing was talking about too much weight and managing that. I remember when I killed my bull in Idaho in 2019, I was being bullheaded. I had good help. Like I had three or four other guys that were there and I was like, you know, and the one guy was carrying some of the gear. He's like, hey, let me take, you know, some weight off of you. Cause I was like, I wanted to carry hindquarter head with the hide on it and all this stuff. And it was like probably, I don't know, probably 120 pounds or so. I mean, it was maybe 110. So it was heavy and it was all downhill. I'm like, it's downhill. That's easy. Well, I hurt my knees going down. Like I just felt, and I still get that pain come back here and there from that event. Yeah. And it was like that one decision of trying to be bullheaded and being like, you know, I can do it was something that, you know, probably lasting as far as having pain in my knee. And what was I going to say for the thinking about the pack out and building up this thing in your head? You know, I did that this year on my moose hunt in Alaska. I was like, moose are huge. And I was like, this swampy environment, like, how are we going to do this? You know, it's going to be heavy. And I'm thinking about the processing, all this stuff. Like, I put that in my head for so much, and we never saw a legal bull. So it was
like, well, yeah. I mean, it's just like, you can like take your time. In most instances, take your time, like slow down, woosah, man. Like, it's not like you're not dealing with life or death in most instances. Just slow down and take your time. Like, take your time cutting it up. Take your time walking out. Realize what's reasonable for you. And I think one of the things is to, like, start to set some rules in your head before you do it and, like, communicate them with your hunting buddies. So, like, if you're trying to be a hero, they can be like, hey, man, you said you were going to limit yourself to, like, 80 pounds or whatever it might be. So that way you don't do anything stupid. But I think we all have that element of being bullheaded, especially dudes, because we just like, I'm tough. I can do it. I want to do it. You know, and it's like, just because you can doesn't mean you should either, you know? And it's like, if we want to do this for the rest of our lives, like, I think a lot of us are approaching 30 or in our 30s, our 40s, whatever. We have to be smart. And like, one stupid thing can mess up your hunting for a long time. And there's no point, there's no sense, like, don't be a hero, you know? And so I know that being bullheaded has gotten me into so much trouble in the past, and it's just not worth it. Like, I was training for a Muay Thai fight, and my coach was a professional kickboxer, and he was being kind of douchey, if we're being honest, but he was like, I just got to make sure you're tough, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, it pushed my buttons, right? And so we're sparring, I don't remember how many minute rounds, but he just starts chopping my leg. And me being an egotistical douche canoe was like, well, I'm not checking one of them. And I just ate all of his kicks, like, from a professional kickball. I just ate them, and it messed up my hip for like 2 or 3 years. Sincerely, 2 or 3 years it took my hip to recover from that. And so it's just like, being bullheaded and being stupid is it's not for what? Like, what do you gain from this? I mean, sure, maybe there's a good story, which I totally understand, but you'll get more stories if you don't do stupid shit sometimes, you know? And sometimes there's no choice, and sometimes you're like, this is going to be wild, let's do it. I get that. But like, there's so many instances where it's like, it's just dumb, don't do it, you know?
Yeah, no, I can understand that. So how do you, like, so with the program, it's broken down in like 12 to 16 week segments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thinking now January timeframe, what's that first phase look like, and why do you have it set up that way?
Yeah. So our first phase, our first block is about building capacity. So building like strength capacity and aerobic capacity. These are the foundational elements that allow us to layer things on top, right? So you have to build different parts of your aerobic system before you can take a step back. Capacity comes before power, because capacity builds raw materials. So things like capillary density, right? The size of your ventricle, left ventricular hypertrophy, which, like, if you hear that, a lot of times it can be misconstrued into a health problem, but in a training way, it's a different type of hypertrophy. Your heart muscle actually expands more. It teaches you to expand and pump out more blood with each beat. Your mitochondrial density, which is like what manages aerobic energy inside of your muscle cells, and which also, and then like your slow twitch fibers, which the more of those you have, the less waste products build up in your muscles when you do hard stuff. And so creating all of these adaptations first and reinforcing those adaptations first allows us to put higher intensity work on top of that. Now, can you still get higher intensity, something out of higher intensity work if you do it without doing this? Sure. But a few things are going to happen. Like, you're not going to get as much out of it as you could. You're not going to be able to do as much of it as you normally would be able to, because you're not going to recover from it. Or you're going to get hurt. And so
the Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
Building these adaptations first give us the foundation that we need for the year to be able to start to layer things on top of that and create as much fitness as we possibly can. So we do a lot more strength and muscular endurance work right now. And we'll do a lot of low to moderate intensity aerobic training, and then just like a little bit of higher intensity aerobic training. And then we'll move into a higher strength phase and an aerobic power phase, which we start to take those adaptations that we built early in the year and make our aerobic system work with more power. So harder shit. And then we'll move into the summer and we'll take all those things that we built for the first half of the year, part of the year, and just make them more specific to hunting. And then once we get into hunting season, you know, we're out hunting, we're doing a lot of shit, and our season, our hunting in-season program is more about continuing to build and maintain our mobility, maintain our strength, and maintain our conditioning while we're out hunting and doing all the stuff that we want to do.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think for me, that was something that was one of the biggest learning curves, is not like just starting with high intensity. You know, there's a purpose for it. And that was something that, you know, that I've seen a lot in the summertime part of, you know, getting ready for hunting season. And still, when I say that, it's in a way that's controlled and that you're building up to it. And I like that in the program also. It's like, if you've hit this goal or you do this, then do this workout. But if you're not there, then do this one. And they're I guess scaled depending on your capabilities and where you're at from a fitness standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, there's no sense in trying to put a square peg in a round hole or try to do things that you're not ready for. And that's like why I want people to start now. 'Cause like, it takes time. If you've for like full aerobic development, it takes like a year. Like you start to get the initial adaptations in like 8 to 12 weeks, but like to really fully develop your aerobic system, it takes like a year. And you can continue to make aerobic gains for years and years and years on end. And so it's a long game and you got to play it that way. And the other thing about that is like the easiest way to get into shape is to never stay out of shape or never get out of shape. And so to make this just part of your routine and your life. And then the other thing to think about is like, you said you went on a 21-day hunting trip, right? Most folks don't get that, right? So they get maybe 7 to 14 days, mm-hmm. right? And go out to hunt elk or hunt mule deer or whatever they're going to do. Let's say we'll get a 10-day backpack hunt. That's 355 days. That you have the rest of your life to live. Now, of course, we all do other kinds of hunts, right? Like we'll hunt whitetails back home or we'll do whatever. But like, think about it from the perspective of your life. Like you, that's one of the reasons that it's human first, man. Like human predator pack mule, like we're humans first. And we have like, we want to be able, I don't have kids yet, but when I do, like be able to play with my kids. And like, I'm going to be old when I have grandkids because I'm already 37 and I don't have kids yet. So like, I want to be able to see my grandkids, you know? And it's like, and it's like all the other aspects of life that we want to do and have our energy for and stuff. Like we have to think about that. Like that is our main thing. Like we want to think about ourselves as hunters, and absolutely we have to be ready to hunt, but we're all of these other things first, and making sure that we take care of our bodies and our, obviously our minds to that we can do those things. That's the most important thing. So if you look at like 2 weeks out of the year, like great, you're going to go do that big hunt, but what about the rest of the year? Like you need to be a good business owner, you need to be a good brother, you need to be a good new father, a husband, whatever it is. We have to think about the sustainability of what we do to make sure that we can do that, and building the consistency of this kind of fitness into our lives so that we can do all of those things. And that's really the biggest thing. Like, and the best part about that is if you do all the things you need to do that, you'll be ready to hunt, you know?
Yeah. No, 100% there. And you know, like one thing that I'll say is the older that I get, the harder it is for me to restart. Like you were saying about always staying in shape. I fully admit this past hunting season was the most that I had hunted and the least that I have done training during that time frame. Even though you have a program that's set out for it, I did not follow along with it during the hunting season. Now I was walking a lot, I was moving stuff, you know, as far as my endurance and everything, I felt like stayed pretty good. We'll see once we do the tests here in the coming weeks. But like from the strength aspect, getting back into the gym a few weeks ago, I was like, holy cow. And then like, I lost a lot. And it was like, there's simple things you can do and to continue with that. And I, the reason why I'm saying that, not everybody's going to have, you know, hunt as much as I did or anything, but you know, you have work trips, you have travel trips, you have things that come up, that are, you know, might make a certain period of time a lot busier than before. What's your advice to those types of people? You know, including myself here.
Sure. The first thing is perspective, right? I think a lot of times people get caught up in all or nothing thinking. And so they think if they can't do the whole thing, it's not worth to do anything, you know? And I think that really limits people. So taking perspective, stepping back and realizing that like, it all counts. It all counts. I made a post, I don't know, a couple few weeks ago. I get made fun of for saying that all the time, but I've made it. We got a word now. It's called couple few. So it's two or three. So couple hyphen few, you can use it if you want to. Everyone has 20 minutes, you know, and it all counts. So if you have 20 minutes, use your 20 minutes and check the box and stay consistent. And so like, you know, whether you're traveling, you're busy with work, whatever it is, like you can't tell me that you don't have 20 minutes because you do. It's like 100%. Look at your fucking screen time on your phone. You know what I mean? Like you got,
don't tell me what to do.
that was the royal you. That was everybody. You know what I mean? Like
I'm not guilty. You know,
I mean, I think we all are, but check the screen time on your phone, man. Like you got 20 minutes, you know? And I think that's the first thing is like, it all counts. Progress is more important than trying to be perfect and at least do something to check the box and build momentum. Now, how do you do that? We call them patterns. I've heard Vernon Griffith, who's another guy that's kind of in the tactical world. He does a lot of cool stuff. I like him a lot. He came in and did a presentation at the group that I work with. He calls them shapes, right? So just because you can't say, let's say that you have a rack pull deadlift programmed for you, right? Just because you don't have that, you're at a hotel gym, and we all know that hotel gyms go up to 50 pound dumbbells, right? So just because you can't do a rack pull doesn't mean you can't train. You can still train that shape or that pattern, which would be a hinge or a deadlift. Then we have squats, we have presses, we have pulls, and we have carries and like everything else. And so rather than getting caught up on the specific exercise, try to match the shape, try to match the pattern. So you can still do an RDL, right, with two dumbbells, you know, instead of doing a, I don't know, like a front squat with a barbell, you can still do a goblet squat. So think about in terms of pattern and shape rather than the exact specific exercise. Then on top of that, it's like, well, think about stress. Okay. So it's going to be difficult to lift as heavy as you normally would, right? So you're not going to put 185 pounds on a front squat and do a front squat, but you can still add stress to that movement. And you can do that by increasing the amount of reps you do, the total volume of the workout, the reps within the entire workout. You can do slower eccentrics. You can hold isometrics at the bottom. You can do whatever you need to add the appropriate amount of stress to that movement to get out of it what you need. So it's really just thinking about shapes and stress from a specific standpoint, especially with strength. And then from there, it's just using your time. You know, if you got 20 minutes, use it. Another thing to think about is understanding principally, and that's why like with Human Predator Pack Mule, I try to educate like all of you guys in Backcountry Ready and stuff so much, because it's like, if you understand the principles, you can apply them in a situation where you otherwise wouldn't know what to do. Where it's like, if you know, okay, the goal is aerobic capacity, and Todd had this circuit set up for us to be able to do that. Well, I don't have the space or the equipment to do the circuit. I can still work on aerobic capacity by getting on the treadmill and jacking it up to a 15 degree incline and walking while keeping my heart rate in the right zone. You know, so it's like it's understanding principles. It's letting go of perfection and realizing that checking the box and progress is better. And then when it comes to strength, it's shapes and stress. How do I use these, the same shapes, and how do I add a little bit of stress to make it worthwhile if I don't have enough weight?
Yeah, no, that's a really good explanation for it. And as me being someone that like would look at things as of, oh man, I can't do this thing, and like just almost get to the point where you'd overthink it and then you don't do anything versus moving with it. And I think that was one thing I did do well this past year is I was traveling a lot during the summer, Total Archery Challenge events, going to this event, that event, whatever. And it was just like, okay, finding something to be able to replace that. It might not, you know, be a 100% solution, but it might be 80% of the way there by, you know, molding it and changing it to be able to do it. You know, I felt good going into hunting season, even though I wasn't able to stay on the exact track as much as I had in the past.
Yeah, dude, yeah, that's a great point. 80% of something's better than 100% of nothing. You know,
yeah,
doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be there. So that's a really good point. But yeah, I appreciate you asking that question because that's one of the things where it's like that's where people fall off, right? They travel or something happens and they're not sure what to do. So it's an important aspect of making sure that you keep yourself consistent.
Yeah, and one thing I remember the first time I was working with you and I was going to a Total Archery Challenge event. I was setting up a booth there. You know, then I had, you know, after dinner plans and socializing and meeting with people and doing all of those types of things. And I was like, man, I'm going to have some, you know, long hours here. You know, what do you, and I was like, what do you recommend I do? This is the equipment I have. And you're like, all right, for that day, I don't recommend you do anything. You need to, you're going to have a high stress day as it is. You need to, you know, you're going to be moving already by, you know, walking the courses, doing stuff like don't add any additional stress and get yourself run down either. So like that was something that was an eye opening and listening to your body talk to you and let it, you know, teach you what's going on too and how you're feeling.
No, for sure. Yeah. And that's one of the things where it's like the caveat of, you know, the kind of ignore your feelings type of thing, right? Where it's like sometimes being silly will run you down where it's like, don't ignore the feeling that your body is like, hey, I'm in trouble. So like training exists on a spectrum. So maybe you have an intense workout plan for that day, but because of all the other extraneous factors of life, just take a walk. Like you're still checking that box by taking a walk, like you're being consistent. And so that's why you have to like, one of those things is taking a step back and not judging yourself and realizing that like consistency is the king. What can you do to stay consistent on that day? And then listening to that and just doing it rather than, you know, getting into that all or nothing thing and saying, well, like, oh, if I can't do this workout this way, I'm not going to do anything, or going and doing something that you probably shouldn't do anyway, because you're shooting yourself into believing that if you don't do that, you're not tough. Or if you don't do this, you're not that. It's like, it's a long game. It's a long game. And you got to play it like a long game.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And one of the things too, I also found like with short on time sort of deal. So like, as you know, most of the listeners know, I'm, you know, huge into whitetail hunting and there's a lot of scouting that comes into it. In the off season, I would combine a lot of my rucking workouts with checking trail cameras. I would just add weight to it. And I'm doing, you know, some more, you know, I would also tailor that weight depending on how tough it was going to be walking again. You don't want it to be a day where you're doing 30-35% of your body weight, some heavier type stuff, and then having to do that, maybe, you know, you cut that back a little bit, but you're doing that thing and you're also being able to check another box in the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a great strategy. And it's looking at training and outside of the box, I think, a little bit, and being creative, right? Where it's like, training can look a lot of different ways. It doesn't always have to look like something in the gym. It doesn't have to be exactly like this rock or that. It's like taking that and realizing that you have to check multiple boxes at once is a great way to approach it.
And the last thing I want to ask before we talk a little bit about your hunting season is the strength aspect. And, you know, I've heard it a lot and, you know, oh, well, you don't have, you know, gym equipment out in the mountains, so why do you do that? You know, and to me, I've never understood that argument. I mean, I've understood what they're saying as far as, yeah, you're not doing that exact thing, but I'll let you take it from there because you explained.
Yeah, I mean, well. And I get it, but that's like, and I mean this in the kindest way that I can say it, but that's just ignorance. Like, that's just people don't understand. Think of relative strength, and that is the amount of strength you're able to express in relation to your body weight. Okay, so the better your relative strength, the better, right? Without where it would run into an issue is if like your strength training comes at a cost to other things that you might need, right? So if you're doing so much strength training that you don't have enough time for the aerobic training that you need to do or the other things that you need to do. So that's the one caveat there. But other than that, like being as relatively strong as possible is what we want within the parameters of having enough training time to do other things, right? And so relative strength makes everything cost less. You have to expend less energy with each step. Every movement you make makes you cost you less energy if you're strong. It's also bulletproofing. It makes you more resistant to like musculoskeletal injury, like all of that kind of stuff. And so a way to look at it is like relative strength is the glass, right? If you have the bigger the glass, the more relative strength, the more stuff you can fit inside of it, right? So whether that be power, that be other aspects of conditioning, all that kind of stuff. So the stronger we are relative to our body weight, the better. We have more options. We have more access to different physical qualities. And so then you look at like, what do we really need to be ready to hunt? We need huge amounts of general work capacity. And then specific capacity, like being able to walk uphill and things like that. But mostly it's huge amounts of general work capacity. The components of work capacity are movement competency, which would be like you move well, and movement capacity. You have access to a lot of movement, so essentially mobility, relative strength, aerobic capacity, and aerobic power, right? Moving well and it costs us less energy, kind of like we were talking about with the pack out. Like the better your joints move, the more efficiently you move, the less energy it costs you. Strength is bulletproofing, also makes things cost less energy, right? And then aerobic power and aerobic capacity, that's like, can you get up the hill fast? And then once you get up the hill, can you recover? And then can you keep going for a long time, right? So those two aspects are what give us that. And so strength is a huge proponent huge component of what we need to be prepared generally and physically, and especially to backcountry hunt. It doesn't need to be overemphasized, but you know, if you're not like our standard, like to say that you don't need to hammer strength is, can you deadlift 1.5 times your body weight for 5 reps? If you can do that, you're decently strong. Like you're not super strong, but you've got a decent level of relative strength. And so that way we know, like if you can't and you're in this first few blocks of the year, we need to focus on your strength. We need to get you stronger because that's going to make a lot of ground for you. But if you're that strong, you don't need to overemphasize the strength. You just need to do what you need to do to, you know, you'll still build some and maintain it. But then we need to make sure that we have space for all the other things that we need to work on, right? And that's one of the reasons that we test, so we can guide people through that kind of stuff. But strength is a huge proponent of longevity, like, you know, keeping your frame strong and resilient throughout the rest of your life. Like you look at the first physical qualities that we start to lose. The first one is power. As we get older, power starts to go first. It's a neurological adaptation. People think about muscles, but like power and strength are mostly neurological. Those are the first things we start to lose. Power first, then strength. Then down the line, it's aerobic stuff. So not only is it preparing us for hunts now, but like if you want to be able to walk up a mountain when you're 75, you need to make sure that you're staying strong now.
Yeah.
And continue to stay strong. Don't stop, you know.
And to it, one of the things that I've felt, and this is really not just strength, but just the overall package is, say, for example, on a Western hunt, you have an elk herd that's heading to this direction and you need to run to be able to cut them off. And you get there, it's like, okay, you got into position, your heart rate, if you can't get that down quickly, now trying to make the shot, you know, throw buck fever out the window. Now you've just elevated it on, you know, on something Absolutely. That could have been controlled, and being able, like, that was one of the, also one of the big things that, that I've learned from training consistently and doing that with you, is like being able to have a high heart rate and bring it down. And you do tests for that too. You're like time, how long it takes you once your heart rate hits this level to get down to this level. And that, you know, kind of gears towards some of the workouts as your steers the wheel, you know, going forward. And I think that's big. And I think that the, also like whitetail, I think whitetail hunters are coming around to it more, as far as like being in shape and doing that. But a lot of the, again, like, especially in the Appalachian Mountain region and places where people are having to hike in a ways and do stuff, there's so much of that that translates over, and just from the mental side of it too, like by being disciplined and doing your workouts every day and doing that. Now you have discipline to get up and, you know, do that thing after so many days and hike into your tree and carry your sticks and your platform and all your stuff that you need to, and to be able to drag or pack out a deer and not have, and not struggle with it. And like those types of things, there's, I think there's so much application to it on the whitetail side. And, Absolutely. And, you know, I've seen people make fun of it. It's like, you don't need to be in shape to be a whitetail hunter. Well, now maybe if you're driving your side by side up to, an elevated blind and you climb up in there,
sure,
whatever. But, and I'm not talking down on that style of hunting, but yes, that probably requires a little bit less of this. But, you know what I'm saying?
But fitness gives you options. That's the biggest thing. It gives you options, you know, and like, you know, talk about whitetail, especially, you know, some of the things that, that I think that you've helped make popular, and Jason from Timber, like saddle hunting, like the whole point is to be able to go back in farther and get away from people, you know, and you can do that without being super fit, but like not as well, and it won't be as fun. But even like the way that I hunt opening day, when I go home to Pennsylvania to hunt, like I go up the most miserable ridge in central Pennsylvania, because like the likelihood of me seeing another guy in orange up there isn't as good. You know what I mean? So it's like, it gives me options to be able to try to get away from people, so I have a better opportunity, you know? And it's like, I think people are coming around, like with the popularity of Western hunting and things like that, that people are hunting whitetails differently back here. I think that they really are, not so much here in Virginia, maybe out towards the mountains of Virginia, not necessarily where I live, but like, even back home in Pennsylvania, like hearing guys talk about how they're hunting them, they're going about it in a different way, because, you know, they realize that if they're willing to put in a little extra work, that, you know, they have a better opportunity. It's also, it's a way cooler story than walking out of camp 20 yards and, you know what I mean, shooting a basket rack behind camp. Like I hiked up a mountain, I did, you know what I mean? Like it's a way different experience. And I think it's far cooler in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, and actually, just to comment on the Virginia thing, Virginia is number three out of my listener base, of mountain whitetail hunters, you know, in the western side of Virginia.
And there's like the out west, dude, for sure. I live
in a little bit different area.
I hunt a 10-acre or 20-acre woodlot for deer is what I hunt down here. It's a little different, but.
Yeah, no, but it's definitely changing and shifting and adapting. I mean, as soon as I get done with this podcast, I'm going to Ohio and some hillier country stuff. It's not super tall, but it's steep stuff, and you know, it's rugged. Takes some effort getting into these places, and you know, it's January now to want to be able to do that at this time of year. You know, it helps to be in shape to do that from you know, when it's cold out, and from a mental standpoint, it just helps. There's nothing else to say about it other than like it just helps. It's not going to hurt you by being in shape to do these things.
It gives you options, like we talked about. It makes everything more enjoyable, and it helps with your decision making. Like you think way differently when you feel confident and like you're inside your body, and you just walked up that hill and you can gather yourself, than walking up a hill and being gassed, and like you're just all of your decision making changes when you don't have to think about your fitness, man. It's a way different experience.
Yeah, no, 100%. So let's wrap this up with hearing a little bit of some stories about you. This past season, you were talking about you went to Idaho on an elk hunt. So tell me about that experience. I haven't got to talk to you on the phone about it or anything, just no. through some text messages, but
it was great. I mean, so I had a muzzleloader tag and so I flew into Pasco, Washington and met my buddy Peter, and we drove over, it was like 8 hours from where we drove to where we hunted. So not a crazy drive, not anywhere near as bad as I've done before, but you know, decent drive. And so, Peter had been sick, but had been getting over being sick. And so thought everything would be fine, you know? And so one of the reasons that I fly now out west instead of driving is to prevent altitude sickness. Cause the first few times I drove out west, I didn't get super sick, but like, the altitude got me, and it was mainly because I was dehydrated and I was underslept, you know? And so like I fly now, I get my sleep, I make sure I drink enough water, and the altitude doesn't affect me the same way. And so we drive over and we get there, and first day we hike in, we spot elk like 2 miles away. I'm like, well, let's go that way, you know? And so we start hiking up towards the top of that ridge. And I'm like, man, like, dude, I'm tired. Like, this is kicking. I think it's the altitude, you know? And I'm like, just kind of keeping that to myself. We hunt all that day, move through some timber. You know, we never find the elk again. Same next day, we go back to the same spot. We start hiking up to the top. And I'm like, Peter, this is kicking my ass, dude. Like, I think the altitude's getting me. He's like, I can't get enough air. And like, I'm tired. He's like, I think you're sick, man. Like, I don't think it's the altitude. You were just at altitude like 2 weeks ago in Montana. I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I think it's altitude. I mean, it's just denial, right? Just denial in my head. So we get to the top of the mountain later that day, and like, dude, I'm just freezing, like freezing. And I'm like, hey, Peter, I think I'm sick, man. Can we build a fire? And so we were build a fire at the top of the mountain. Like, dude, I was literally like chills so bad. Like, I was rattling my bino harness. Like, it was brutal. Like, I could hear, like, I had my speed loaders for my muzzle loader in there, and I could hear like the bullets bouncing back and forth in there, cause I was shivering so hard. And so I get sick. I'm fucking sick, dude. I don't know if it was the flu or COVID or what it was. So we hunt all that day. We hike back down. Like, dude, I don't think I can hunt the next day. So I get up, I'm sick as shit. I stay in the truck all morning. And then I'm just like, I get a wild hair up my ass and I start hunting the next day. And so hike up the mountain, you know, don't get into anything. Well, we end up the next day finding a group of about 300 elk. Ooh. And so, yeah, it was a big group. Problem was, they knew the game, right? So they stayed high and they stayed in the open. And so we were hunting country that honestly looked like there should just be antelope, but it's at like 8,000-9,000 feet. But just wide open, one willow bottom that kind of starts at the top of this ridge and then flows down into this bottom. And so we see him about 6 miles away. We drive around, and then we have about a mile and a half hike in, climbing pretty good elevation to get back up into there. And then there, a mile and a half away, on the top of this ridge. And so we're sitting there just like the first day, just thinking like, what the hell can we do? You know? And we realized like our only hope is that willow bottom. Like, that is it. That is our only hope. That's the only way we're going to be able to move. And so we go back in the next morning. Elk are pretty much in the same spot. We sit there and look for a while, trying to figure out like our only hope is to get in front of them. Because there's 300 eyes, right? So we got to get in front of them. We got to ambush them. Like, that's the only chance. So like, there is some topography we can use, and like, if they go that way, we might be able to swing around and let them feed into us. Turns out it looks like they're going to go towards the willow bottom. And so I'm sicker than a dog. I don't know. Like, I'm just wrecked, dude. And so we hike, we stalk a mile and a half up this willow bottom and get 270 yards from the elk. And it was, dude, it was so cool. It was early. We stopped hunting the 10th or the 9th of November. That was our last day. So we're looking at like, this was like the 7th to the 8th of November. Like I said, about 300 elk, bunch of bulls in there. And there's 2 6x6s that are just beautiful, right? All of the bulls are bugling. like all evening in November. Like they're all bugling, right? And so we hike up this, we get up to the bottom of this willow bottom. They keep feeding, they're 270 yards away from us. The closest ones are 270 yards away. And so I'm every once in a while, like poking out with my binoculars, like just a little bit behind out of the willows to just like have a peek. And right as I do it this one time, one of the 6x6s just lays his head back and just rips a bugle, man. And like the sun's setting right behind him. And like, it's just, it was just iconic. Like it was gorgeous, man. And like at that minute, I was like, all right, that was worth the cost of admission. Like,
yeah,
it was worth the cost of admission. I mean, I still wanted to kill him. Don't get me wrong. But like, I was like, okay. And so it looked like if we stayed there, they would feed right into us. And so we stayed put. It looked like we were going to have a shot. And then we just ran out of daylight. That was as close as we got. And so we backed out. And then like, as it started to get dark, we backed out, didn't blow them out. But I was just like, I was on a high from that, right? Like it was incredible. Like I would have loved to kill that bull, but just being able to be there and see that was incredible. So we come back in the next day, elk are essentially in the same spot. And so we're figuring out how we're trying to get to them. We get kind of aggressive. I'm at this point, like I'm so sick, I can barely do anything. Like we hike in and I sit down. I fell asleep. We hiked up the willow bottom a little farther. We sit down again. I go to drink some water. I fell asleep. Like I was just, I couldn't keep up. I couldn't move. Like Peter, they start feeding away. Peter runs up to the top of the hill. There's a little bit of timber at the top, just a tiny bit. He goes, I try to keep up with him. I can't. And then he just cops up over the hill, comes back down, and he's like, hey, I think they're feeding back around. He's like, I think we're going to have a shot. I was like, oh, awesome. And so we see them, and it looks like they're feeding down. There's like a willow bottom that came down from the top, and then there's one that kind of ran in between a few ridges, and it looks like they were coming back down to water. And so we start moving that way. I find a second wind. It looks like we're going to be able to get out in front of them and like at least each of us kill a cow or something, right? Peter's like, did you hear that? I was like, what? No. He's like, dude, I just heard a gunshot. I'm like, and so we hike up to the top of the one hill, and we just see some guy ripping through with his trekking poles. The elk are just who knows where, right? Like four counties away at this point. And he had to have just ripped a pop shot. Like there's no way that he actually had a good shot that he had lined up and like, cause we're looking like, did he kill an elk? Like, is there something down? And he just, I must have ripped a pop shot. All the elk are gone, and like,
oh,
that was it. So, but it was a very big challenge physically and mentally for me, because I was very sick the whole time. But it was just one of those deals where like, I gotta hunt, right? Like, I gotta hunt, and so we did. And I'm very grateful that I got to see that bull lay his head back and like that. It was really neat, man.
Dude, being sick on a hunt is one of the worst things. I mean, that's what led to me having the altitude sickness in 2021. That's
right.
You know, where I went in there and had a sinus infection and found I had mono, I had all these different things when I was, you know, and that, you know, made it to where the altitude was just exemplified, you know, just or amplified. Like it was so much more. And, but one thing, for me, cause I was getting sick a lot over the past few years, and it seemed like every hunt I was going on, I was getting sick. And I talked to you about it before, and you've told me, and Heather Kelly's told me, you got to sleep, you know, you got to sleep more. I was averaging for years 4 to 5 hours of sleep a night. Yeah. And so I've made it a goal, really since I left my full-time job, was like, okay, you need to prioritize sleep and recovery. And so I have a goal of 7 hours a night. And, you know, six being kind of a minimum, but always trying to make that happen. And man, I had not been sick that, you know, I'll still get sick here and there, but which is going to happen, but that's helped me out so much, from, you know, being on these hunts and doing things. You know, there's going to be times on hunts when you can't get as much sleep or whatever, but sure, just the rest of the year, same thing as we're talking about with training. It's like consistently getting, you know, rest and recovering helps instead of building yourself up for failure.
Big sleep debt. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, that's what allows you to go on the hunts and be in a sleep debt for 2 weeks and still be able to do what you need to do doing the things that you need to do the rest of the year. And then it's like, well, you only get a few hours of sleep a night when you're hunting. Like, and also be it. That's the deal. But like the rest of the year, you got to be pretty locked in if you really want to get the most out of it. So, yeah.
No, 100%. Well, cool, Todd. I appreciate you coming back on and talking with me again. It was fun getting to catch up a little bit and you spreading your wisdom with the listeners.
I appreciate the opportunity, man. I'm supposed to be going to Ohio this weekend too, and I can't. So I hope you have good luck, man. I hope you kill a buck.
I'll do it for you, man. I expect
you to text me if you kill one and say I did this for you.
I will. I'll take a picture, and you know, maybe I will even, you know, take a picture and crop your head on it, and you can, you know, do what you want with it.
Yeah, that's morbid, man.
No, not on the deer.
Oh, okay.
on me, you know. So then you know.
Oh yeah. Well, listen, that'd be a much better looking picture now, wouldn't it?
Yeah. For everyone listening, I texted Todd beforehand, and we were going back and forth with what we were going to chat about, and he's like, we should probably start off with how good looking I am. And I was like, oh, you know what? Yes. Well, you're going to do the podcast shirtless, and that's exactly how it's going to work.
Well, for full disclosure, like I was sitting in a tree stand when I texted him back, and I had my neck buff up over my face and everything. So
yeah. That's why I said it. But. No, he's not really arrogant.
No, I'm not. I tend not to be a total arrogant douche canoe. So
yeah, and you should definitely follow along with both Human Predator Pack Mule and Todd's personal Instagram. His personal one's funny. He throws in some quirky things. But you also are a good writer, and I don't mean to say that in a surprised way. But you're a good writer as well. I enjoy reading your captions, and
thanks, man.
Whether it's informational, whether it's just funny, whatever it might be, it's pretty good. But and then humanpredatorpackmule.com. Where else can people find some of this information and check it out?
Yeah, just that's what you said. The Instagram and the website are the two biggest places to go. And then if you know you have questions or anything like that, just humanpredatorpackmule@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to answer them.
Awesome. Again, thank you for coming on, and we will catch you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.